Hey everybody, what's up? It's me, your host, Dangerous ASMR, and we're back, of course, for another Drunk and Dangerous. I would ask how you were, but you've decided to spend your time here, so I think we all know how you're doing. Great, of course, because you're making excellent decisions, just like I am, coming back to read more Moon People 3 back by popular demand. Everyone needs to feel like they too could publish a book, and you could. No one is stopping you. Quality be damned, and certainly be damned. Look, if this is your first Drunk and Dangerous, you can back out now, but you probably won't want to. You'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy the pain, you know, you little masochist, because we're going to read some of the worst fiction, and you're going to think, you know, wow, Dangerous is really mean. These poor authors, you know, they're trying. And they are. They're trying my patience. Just give it some time. Let the quality of the work really sink in. And you'll understand. You'll come to be on my side and you'll say, wait, really? There's so few redeeming qualities. The one redeeming quality of this series is the enjoyment I've gotten out of it as a story. Blatant ripoff of Star Trek at many points, except it's like, take Star Trek, but just make it really, huff a bunch of glue and jack off in front of a mirror a bunch. And then you got that kind of story. Anyway, airplane glue, narcissistic, self-involved Star Trek ripoff. Here we go. Moon People 3, Chapter 4, The Goddess of Love. Ooh. Hmm. Oh, wait, it's in the middle of the conversation. Because he had a steak and shrimp lunch. Do you guys remember? Last chapter, he went to Red Lobster. Okay. I'm pretty sure this is David, so my apologies for the terrible voice you're going to have to go through. And then all we have to do is spray the water and bacteria mix from the applicators in the outer atmosphere, then take away the eclipse. Okay. Or tone it down a bit and watch it work. Boy, I hope this works as easy as it sounds? Question mark. This reminds me of an old Earth commercial for Shack and Bake. I think it's Shake and Bake. You can tell it worked well when you don't even get the product right. And the phrase was Shack and Bake and I helped. Yeah, it's definitely Shake and Bake. In case you're not from the US, it's just the... And you don't have it in your country. It's just like a shake coating thing. It's like you put meat in there and then you just shake it in the bag. And oh, look, I made chicken. I put it in a bag and I shook it. Or Shack and Bake. It could be totally different. And I'm amazed they didn't get sued by Shake and Bake. But oh well. Then suddenly David's doorbell sounded off. And when he opened the door, he seen a pretty sight. Oh, thank God we're getting treated to his weird daughter fill-in romantic relationship thing. The character he's banging is named after his real-life daughter. If you didn't know that. People who've listened, they know. They're like, thanks for the reminder. You're welcome. I'm putting salt in the wound as we speak. Rub, rub, rub. This is a good thing on the moon. Shut up. You're welcome. It was Heather. And she figured he would be here at this time. Because he is usually here at or around this time of day for lunch when there isn't anything going on. That sounds about right. David was stunned. Heather was so beautiful looking. Of course she is. She came from you, David. And you're perfect. You fucking creep. I'm guessing it's David saying this.
Well, hello, honey. I was just thinking about you.
Then David took a more intent look and said,
"You look as pretty as Venus, the goddess of love herself."
He wants to give her another approximate 60 minutes of sex, you can tell. I look at him just like, wow, we could all learn something from this smooth talker. He must get laid constantly. Then Heather gave David a very sexy look. You know that, am I stroking out or am I winking at you? Who knows? And with a sexy manner, but it's manner like a house, so she brought a little sexy house there too. And with a little sexy house, she leaned in and said, thank you, David. I thought I would stop by and see if you were here for lunch. Then Heather gave David another sexy smile and said, I thought I might get lucky. Yeah, you know your dad can't say no to you. Then another sexy smile. Oh, wait. Then David started snickering. And said, it looks like I'm the one that might get lucky. Then David leaned in and started kissing Heather. And said, you know, honey, there's nothing in the whole wide... You have to call her honey. There's nothing in the whole wide world I'd rather do than make love to you. There's a bunch I would rather you do. But unfortunately for me... Oh, fortunately for the rest of us. I cannot right now because we have this Venus Genesis going down. I have to leave in a few minutes to go to my science office.
As opposed to his non-scientific office, where he just jacks off. That's called the bathroom.
For a couple of minutes, and then back to the bridge. But I do appreciate the thought, though. In fact, if you want to come back around 0500, I would love to start back up where we left off.
You mean her just standing in the doorway awkwardly?
Then Heather replied, oh, you would you? Well, I don't know. I don't get turned down much. I prefer to rape them.
Why are you being weird about it? You can say no, goddamn. Just because they're a man doesn't mean they can't say no and not be in the mood. Don't be weird. Don't be weird just because we're in space. Stop it. We don't have gender roles in space. We are all they in space. It's the rules. Genitals, no. We're all Ken dolls in space. You can't fuck in space. There's a whole reason that they don't want married couples in space. No space babies allowed. I don't know how they didn't approach the abortion angle, but the fact that sex is treated like a handshake, they have some way to prevent these pregnancies, right? I mean, maybe in the future, in the next, what is this, like 20 years from now this is set? They'll have also dealt with that issue. Everything's been solved in the next 20 years. You're welcome. Calm down. This is all going to be a thing of the past. We're terraforming left and right. Button push here, button push there. We terraformed everything. Well, thanks, Space Jesus, who also exists, by the way. Don't forget that. He's real and he's here to stay. Where am I? Okay, let's see. Heather gave a funny look and said, in fact, I don't think I've ever been turned down before. I'll see what I can do, though. Then David said,
did you ever find your blue dress?
Heather answered, no, I didn't. But they said it would show up eventually. So I'll just have to wait.
Then David said,
it'll show up. You'll see.
He probably sewed one for her from his fucking pubic hair. David smiled again and said,
where's it gonna go?
Let's see.
Unless we jettisoned it in outer space, it's gotta be here somewhere. I'm the commander and I never heard the order to jettison your dress.
David smiled again, very, very pleased with himself.
All right, now, you win, Heather said. I'm gonna go for now, but you just might see me around 0500, though.
Then Heather gave David a long and erotic kiss. And said,
you're my Genesis, man.
And chuckled.
And Genesis.
Yeah. Then David said,
You know, honey, now I can't wait for 0500 for some reason.
Oh, your subtext wasn't clear, sir. What reason could that be? Huffing that glue. Oh, my God. My Genesis, man. So dumb. They kissed one more time, and then Heather left, and David took off for his science department. As David arrived at his office, but which one? Was it the science office? Who knows? He quickly unloaded from the air shuttle and went in the office. Everyone was in the conference room going over all the details of the photosynthesis project from start to finish. Then David walked in the conference room and said,
"Good afternoon, everyone. I thought I'd come down and join you here for the final layout of the project. Well, Captain Friedman, what did you come up with?"
Then Captain Friedman replied, "Sir, we have went over everything several times, and this is the procedure that we came up with. One, well, sir, the first thing we thought might be the microwave beam on the ice cavity, hoping that we find water, which we will, because, I mean, come on, God's on your side. Number two, second, I don't know why it has numbers, and then he's saying second. Number two, fucking bunch of spaces, second, comma, place our nitrogen canisters on the surface. Each canister holds enough nitrogen for a 500-mile radius. Three, then we launch all of the photosynthesis applicators in the outer atmosphere around Venus. Then, sir, all we have to do is get out of the way of the sun." Then David spoke up and said,
"That's exactly what I came up with too, Captain."
He's so the guy who, like, works on a project and doesn't do shit. And he's like, "Yeah, that was totally what I came up with too, guys." Yeah, I've been that guy. For sure, I totally agree with your hypothesis, whatever it was. You seem like you know what you're doing. Yeah, Venus, nitrogen, I'm right there with you.
"Very good, everyone. Let me show all of you on this view, this on the view screen,"
David said.
"Here we go. Here is what I was waiting to hit the ice cavity. That is the center of the cavity."
Everyone looked at where David was pointing on the screen, and they were all in agreement.
"Everybody, you've done a great job here on this Venus Genesis. We still have a whole lot to do, so I just want all of you to know that this may not do the trick, but it should get us closer to our goals. There's only one way to find out our answers. I'm going to go back to the bridge and get started on everything. But don't worry, everyone will get credit for this project. I'll make sure of it. Okay, now I guess we can get going on all of the canister applicators and the satellite applicators. Oh, well, I better get back to the bridge. Once again, good job, everyone!"
Then David left and went back to the bridge, and they could all sigh in relief. When he arrived, Admiral Benson was on the bridge going over protocol with everyone. That's right, when David comes, talk slowly and avoid eye contact. Oh, David, hello. David. "Hello, Commander. Is everything still looking good?"
"Yes, sir,"
David answered.
"I just left my office where we had a big conference on the Genesis. We're all unanimous, sir, on procedure."
No one else spoke.
"I recommend we hit the ice cavity dead center like we did Mars, then place the canisters on the surface, then we launch the satellite photosynthesis applicators. Finally, sir, we can get out of the way of the sun, sir, or tone it down a hair."
What? Tone the sun down? We have like a little partial curtain that you draw. Only 80% sun now. We put a little sunscreen on Venus. A literal sunscreen? Where are my answers? This science textbook is worthless. Just turn it down. Just turn the sun down a little bit. "Outstanding, Commander," the Admiral replied. "It sounds like we have a good plan. Well, Commander, what do you say you get situated at your station and we get started on the Genesis project?" David answered,
Very good, sir.
David sat down at his station and started turning on all of his monitors and equipment. Then, when he was ready, he said,
Sir, I'm all ready now, and if you like, I can ready our microwave beam. We just need to warm it up a couple minutes.
Admiral, oh yeah.
Admiral, if you want, Lieutenant Parsons can fire the beam on your mark. I thought we would do it like we did on Mars. You know, sir, fire the beam at 3-second intervals starting out. Then increase if needed, sir.
Then the Admiral said, Very good, Commander. If you're ready, Lieutenant, we will fire the microwave beam. Lieutenant Parsons smiled at the Admiral and then said, I'm ready for your mark, sir.
Excellent, Lieutenant, the Admiral replied. Go ahead and fire on my mark, Lieutenant.
Lieutenant Jenna Parsons, the pilot, in brackets.
We're all go here, sir.
Then the Admiral said, Okay, Lieutenant, fire the microwave beam on full power for 3 seconds.
Yes, sir, the Lieutenant replied. Firing now, sir. From space, you could see a yellow beam that was encircled around a middle yellow beam. A yellow beam and a middle yellow beam. The microwave beam had 200,000 watts of power coming out of the ship. And by the time it hits the surface, it's about 50,000 watts. And by the time it gets to the ice cavity beneath the surface, it's about 20,000 watts of power and was also a very effective weapon if needed. It seemed to penetrate through everyone's shields except the Martian ships in the war last year. The microwave beam lost a lot of its power when it did penetrate their shields, but it was still able to penetrate enough power to start a low-frequency microwave heating effect to cause a lot of damage. We were there. Do you think somebody's picking this up at Book 3? Who would possibly? But we would rather use it in a Genesis project like this one or the Mars Genesis. With the help from the Martians, we are putting all of the Martian shields and weapons on all of Earth's space fleet, because fuck your Martian shit. It's ours now. What are you going to do? Stop us? We're colonizers, beach? The Paulines, we're also doing the same thing to their space fleet, too. The Martian weaponry is just going to everybody but people on Mars. Fuck them, right? Spread it around to all your friends. This is ours now. Thanks for the planet. The Martian weaponry advanced the Paulines, the most powerful world in the galaxy, because of their size. They already had the biggest and most powerful space fleet in our galaxy, but their weaponry was like ours. Now all 3 planets have the Martian weapons. We don't mind the Paulines having the weapons because they already had power over the galaxy, and they treated everyone with kindness and generosity. If it wasn't for the Paulines, we would have never gotten light speed and many other future technologies. They also saved Earth twice and Mars in the war for the control of the galaxy. Therefore, they could never do anything wrong, right? Yeah, smart. Put all your eggs in that basket. We do a lot of trade with the Paulines, and they have always treated us with fairness and kindness. They helped out a lot with the Mars Genesis, too, and asked nothing in return except for fair trade. Another big event is the President and the Paulines have made another large trade deal for 20 more of their ships of all kinds to us. They all had light speed capability. Of course they did. They can't not. Are you kidding me? They might as well be trash at that point. Floating fucking space trash. It seems that Earth has a lot of minerals and food and plants and trees and fish that the Paulines like. Earth has a lot more trees and vegetables and life forms than the Paulines' home planet. Plus the fact that the Paulines really do like us. The way they see us is that they have only had good luck with us, and they really admire us for doing these Genesises. I guess it is that Mars was so successful. If the Archons and the Thracians ever came back, they will be defenseless, and they will be defenseless with the weapons we have now. Because of the Martians, we became very powerful with their shields and firepower. Their weapons now can't even penetrate our shields. We seen in the war last year that everything the Martians had was so far ahead of and for everyone else, the Archons didn't have a chance. The Aurora has already fully completed with the installation of the Martian shields on board, and they were working on the Martian weapons at present, but they are not working at this time. We are going to have one of the Martians for a science officer soon to assist Commander Braemar. Are you... What? Commander Braemar really wanted the Martians in his science organization. They would be a big asset on board our ship. You can't... Ours or theirs? Which is it? Are you on the ship or are you not on the ship, you little shit? As we go all over the universe, our ship. They are way advanced to even the Paulines. The Paulines even wanted some Martians on their planet because they were so advanced. Everyone was getting along so well on Mars. Mars was a major success. Even some of the Archon prisoners liked it on Mars. Yeah, I bet they had a great time being a prisoner. We were learning a lot about the Archons and Thracian prisoners and how they lived and their diet. They had a ferocious appetite. We were also learning a lot more about the Martians and all of their mental powers, too. They even loved our television shows and our movies. What about your porn? They were just like us. They could easily access our satellites on Earth for our television networks and communication networks, and their translators could translate the movies easily for them. On Mars, you could see them watching all of the shows on Earth and laughing hard. The Martians and the Paulines both loved our video games the most. They were an incredible race. They could even fly by mental levitation for a short distance of about 1 mile, but it would take all of their energy out of them. Dr. Moon on board the Aurora told the Martians not to levitate for at least 6 months so they could gain their strength back. Kind of like a stop smoking kind of thing. Yeah, they're clearly identical. Smoking cigarettes and levitating using your mind are basically the same. Totally the same. When we were reviving the Martians after the Genesis, one of the nurses just touched one of the Martians and she immediately passed out, as in the past. She went into the past, apparently, drained of all energy. She was all right, though. Then the Martians figured out we were saving them and they loved us after that. They were so happy just to get a second chance of living in the solar system. We resurrected a little over 1,200 Martian lives on the Mars Genesis. That does not include all of their original native animals that they all fed random-ass food, right? There were over 700 Martians animals that survived after we fed them random Earth food. We even saved some plants that they had in their lab. Of course, we brought over a lot of Earth's animals and people and a lot of plants and trees and flowers, because obviously this is your place now, right? Not theirs. Fuck them. Plankton, and so did the Paulines. They brought plankton. Mars had the best of all the planets. Mars was such a beautiful world now, and the Martians couldn't be happier. They even said to themselves they weren't this happy when they were alive 100,000 years ago. Yeah, okay. I'm sure it's just, well, like the one that said it was like seeing their kid being born. Suck his dick a little harder. But they missed all their friends and family that died from the meteor shower that wiped out the planet. No shit. They were still very sad about that. Are you fucking retarded? I mean, I don't want to be offensive. Are you fucking mentally challenged? Are you serious, dude? They haven't gotten over everyone else on the planet they knew and loved dying. No shit. No shit. What? You'll never get over that. They've been alive for what you said, 100,000 years? How long did they know these people? How much of their existence was spent? Probably the entire fucking thing. So they've been alive so much longer than you can imagine. Of course. They are fucking devastated. Jesus. Fuck, man. Is this what it's like when you can't look past your own navel? You're like, wow. Still really broken up about that whole everyone you know dying thing. It's been like a month. We've already, like, terraformed Venus. Calm down. Look at these all new animals we brought you. You're welcome. They wrote all about their friends in books. and wrote a lot of stories about their past. They missed all of their people so much. The Martians were the leading alien world of the galaxy in their time, but they knew that what we had done was change their fate, so they were so happy to get a second chance in the solar system. Now they know their place. They literally loved us. Literally? They made love to you? I bet they did. In fact, they were so grateful. We knew that they would do anything we would ask. Abuse it. Abuse that privilege now. But we never ask them to do anything for what we did for them. Except be our friends. Because they're so good. He's so good, you guys. We also found out something that was fascinating to know. We found out from Vinal, the ruler of Mars, and his scientists, that the comet that hit Earth was our moon. When it hit the Earth, the impact was so great that it first melted the comet, then it bounced off of the Earth in its present position and became our moon, and left all of its water on Earth that made our oceans. You guys, science. It's science, okay? This is how everything came to be. It's galactic ping pong. Kind of like if you had a truck full of water and it hit another car in an accident. Then the truck would bounce off the other vehicle, leave it covered in water, and orbit it. I mean, they didn't say the last part. And it'll just orbit the other truck in perpetuity unless something knocks it out of the orbit. That's how it works. You know what trucks are like, right? Guys, you all drive a vehicle with four wheels, is it? And yes, the thing in the back, the truck futon, whatever you call it. The elongated seat. We all know vehicles. Okay, let's see what the fuck else. I got distracted by trucks. Oh, yeah. We reenacted the scenario in space. Oh, my God. I thought for a second it was going to be with the truck. I thought it was going to be like, we reenacted the scenario in space. We got two trucks. I'm like, y'all fuckers had time to get two trucks and fill the bed of one truck up with water and be like, okay, let's show David how this worked. So bring out the trucks. In a weightless environment experiment, it did the exact same thing. The comet came from the constellation of Capricorn, where one of its stars went supernova with a two-piece and shot it out into the galaxy toward us. Also, the comet that hit us was once an inhabited planet like Earth. One of the Martian scientists named Barco Polo, it's B-A-R-C-O, B-A-R-C-O, and Barco was his name. Oh, I'm sorry. The Martian scientist named Barco woof, woof, also said that we might check our moon for an ice cavity. Everything's got an ice cavity. At this point, I feel like I need to go to the doctor and have him check me for ice cavity. Beneath its surface, like you did us, the Paulians also traded 20 of their ships to the Martians in exchange for their shields and weaponry. We had already given the weapons and shields to the Paulians. They were so grateful, though, that they gave the ships to the Martians, and Vinal immediately ordered the installation of all their weapons and shields, and also they were adopting the Pauline moonship engines with their own engines to be put on board all of their moonships. Their engine were capable, or light speed. They were capable or light speed for very short distances. They would just appear and disappear without a sound barrier being broken, as quiet as a mouse. Their fighter crafts were very easy to fly and really neat to watch when they did disappear and reappear. We were going to wait for them to design the engines, and then we were going to see if they would trade it to us for our fleet. He also put a lot of their Martian fighter crafts on board their moonships. They were a real asset to the Martian moonships. There may not be a lot of Martians on their planet, but they have a very effective space fleet now. In brackets, Commander Braemar.
Admiral, I'm showing no change at all on my instruments. I recommend doing a 10-second interval this time.
Admiral Benson answered, I can talk.
Very good, Commander. Lieutenant Parsons, let's do it again, except this time you will do a 10-second interval because you couldn't fucking hear.
Lieutenant Parsons replied,
yes, sir. Initiating now, sir.
A time counter came onto the huge main view screen. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You could also see the microwave ray hitting the surface of the planet. Sir, the 10-second interval is now finished. Then everyone seen steam shooting out all over on the surface of Venus, like it did on Mars. Is anyone surprised? No, of course not. Then David was analyzing the data from all of the probes that they had already put on the surface of Venus. And that's the end of chapter 4. Chapter 5 is Venus shows signs of life. Is this just going to be terraforming Mars all over again? Are there going to be animals and, like, we're going to drop, feed them random shit on the planet, and then you're going to find Venus aliens in, like, the fucking caves, and you're going to reawaken them, and they're going to be like, oh my god, thank you. You protector, please take everything we've ever had and known. Please rape our planet and make it, like, yours now, because we're basically beholden to you. Yay. Okay, Venus shows signs of life, chapter 5. We're not going to go all the way through unless it's, like, fabulously short, but I doubt he would be that kind. Probably stop over at this picture of Earth, the moon? Who knows? It's in black and white. Bingo, sir! David spoke out loud, as opposed to in his head, because he says that sometimes and realizes no one can hear him, and he has to repeat himself.
We have oxygen, among other things, but we have oxygen.
Everyone shouted, all right, because they still have those brain worms connecting them all.
Sir, I'm still showing a lot more ice down below and another huge ice cavity back at the other coordinates we just left, sir. Sir, I suggest we hit every one of these ice cavities and put all the oxygen and water we can on the surface while we have the planet eclipsed. Also, Admiral, I believe we're cooling off the planet some just by eclipsing it for so long, not by what you see now. What I mean is, when we go to take away the eclipse, the overall planet should be cooler than it was just from being eclipsed for all this time.
I agree, Commander, the Admiral said, having done nothing at all. Do you want to go 3 10-second intervals or just one more 10 seconds only? In brackets, David.
Admiral, let's try 3 10-second intervals and stretch this shit out. One time, just to see if it is better to go a little harder instead of slow and steady.
Then the Admiral said, okay, Commander. Lieutenant, let's accommodate the Commander and initialize the microwave beam for 3 10-second intervals. And she's like, thank God I wasn't listening.
Yes, sir, said Lieutenant Parsons. First 10 seconds beginning now, sir. First 10 seconds complete. Second 10 seconds complete. Third 10 seconds are completed now, sir.
Just making shit up.
4, 5, 6.
You could see the massive microwave beam turn on and off on the main view screen. It was a sight to see. Then suddenly Venus started spewing steam all over the northwest side of the planet. I hope there were no living creatures there.
Commander Braemar.
Sir, the experiment is working.
I'm shocked.
We're showing a lot more oxygen on the surface.
All of a sudden, you could see Venus snowing at their location. It was coming down heavy. It was starting to accumulate on the surface. You can tell. Before you knew it, everything was clouding up. You could even start to see an upper jet stream starting to grow, or a massive cold front forming. Everything was steaming up into the higher atmosphere and turning into snow. Then David said,
sir, I believe we're about out of ice at this location. Request we move to our last location where we found another huge ice cavity below the surface.
This fucking universe is ripe with ice cavities. Every planet, ice cavity, ice cavity,
Ice cavity, ice cavity. You, me, ice cavity. Why are you so cold and dead inside, ice cavity? It's an answer to everything. Let's see, where are we? Oh, yeah. Then the Admiral said, Commander, when you cook, you sure can cook a planet, presumably. Request granted, Commander. And he gargled his fucking balls. Lieutenant Parsons, take us to your last location.
Lieutenant Parsons.
Affirmative, sir. Going back to our last location now, sir. The Aurora very gracefully moved from one location back to the other.
Okay, Admiral,
said David.
I just need a couple of minutes to coordinate the right location to concentrate the microwave beam. Sir, we have a huge ice cavity here. I can't stress it enough. I would say about twice as big as the one we just left. If this is mostly water, we should be in better shape oxygen and water-wise than Mars, or as good. One more thing, Admiral. We could leave in place two or three satellites with just a slight tint to their ecliptic shield to them, so that just the right amount of sun gets through. We can adjust it from the temperature on the surface. The reason I'm saying this is just in case the sun might be too hot,
but fucking spelled like the goddamn number.
And that we might have to tone it down a bit, sir, too.
Again, the number.
Maintain life or a colony. It all depends on the end result of this experiment, though.
David had an anxious look on his face and said,
Okay, one more calculation and voila!
Except, instead of voila, or even voila, it is all caps W-A space L-A. For a second, I thought, what acronyms are these? No, he's saying voila. He doesn't know it's a French word. He thinks it's voila. Is it Washington, Los Angeles?
Admiral, I believe we have our correct coordinates laid in and we can fire one 10-second interval just to warm up the area if everyone's ready.
The Admiral answered, You got it, Commander. Lieutenant, what do you say we do it one more time?
Lieutenant Parsons gave the Admiral a big fucking smile and said, Affirmative, sir. Here goes. Suddenly, you could watch the LED display on the large view monitor count down from 10 to 0. Then, just like before, you could see steam shoot out high into the upper atmosphere. As it cooled, it would turn into a big cold front and start dumping large amounts of snow back down all the surface of Venus.
Well, Commander, I like your work, sir, said the Admiral.
Thank you, sir. But it is all of us here taking the same amount of risks and putting in the same amount of dedication.
You know, I love that humble brag where he's like, this is a write-in for me, but I would be so humble and constantly be trying to give other people the credit, even though I'm clearly the genius behind it all. I mean, everyone's going to suck my dick and be like, no, stop, please. Don't forget the little people. All the other NPCs who helped me get here on my quest. Me, David Bramer, the main character. Not that it bothers me. I'm fine. I'm fine. I love it. It's great. Let's continue. Oh, let's see. I just keep losing it. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Everybody else in that, too. The same dedication.
Well, sir, what do you say to trying 3 10-second intervals once on this ice cavity?
I'm go if you are, Commander, said the Admiral. Okay, Lieutenant, let's do it one more time. Let's do 3 10-second intervals. The Admiral said... Lieutenant Parsons smiled and said, I know, sir.
Here we go again. Initiating the microwave now, sir. Then suddenly on the main viewer you could see the microwave beam from the ship to the surface of Venus, as opposed to every other time. No, wait, we always could. Okay, maybe it's bothering me a little. Then suddenly on the main viewer, it was quite a sight to see. A pretty yellow beam that wrapped around one single yellow beam all the way to the surface. On and off it went 3 times, and finally it was done. Then, without warning, the top half of volcano blew off into 1,000 different pieces into the outer atmosphere. You could see steam shooting out all over the top half of Venus. Most of Venus's northern hemisphere was clouding over and then turning into massive snowstorms, but slow moving. Then everyone looked at David kind of funny. They probably all wanted to bang him because of his superior geniosity. David started smiling back and said,
"You know, this is really not all that out of the ordinary. You see, most volcanoes seal themselves when they cool. The steam just built up until the volcano's top blew off."
Then the Admiral started laughing, ah-ha-ha, and said,
"You have my vote, Commander."
They're going to jettison him off with the dress.
"Well, what's next, Commander?"
the Admiral asked.
"Well, sir, I believe we should do it."
"Hell yeah.
Until we get as much oxygen and water on the surface as we can for the experiment. I believe we should be all right now, sir."
But not all right. It's all right. Like one word, all right.
"We'll be all right now. We already blew the hole open for the rest to come out."
Then the Admiral looked at David and smiled and said, "Okay, Commander, what you're saying about getting all of the water and oxygen on the surface makes sense to me, S-I-N-C-E to me. I'm going to go ahead and give the okay, but if there are any more blowouts, maybe we should rethink our strategies." Oh, he already rethought, and that's why he's wearing diapers. Commander Bramer laughed
and said, "You got it, sir, but I really don't think we're going to see any more massive explosions, sir."
Well, he's God, so you know if he says it, it's true.
"But it's not all that out of the ordinary with what we're doing. It could happen, though. We really do not have much ice left, sir, about 1/3 of what we started with. We might have about 1 more time with the 3 10-second intervals that will probably do the trick, sir."
Then the Admiral said, "Very good, Commander. I just want you to know I'm behind you 100%. Platitude, platitude, empty platitude. I wasn't listening."
The Admiral smiled and said, "Okay, Lieutenant, let's do 3 more 10-second intervals." Then Lieutenant Parsons said, "Very good, sir. Initiating first sequence." "First sequence starting now, sir." Then once again, you could see the number countdown come on the view screen. While the beautiful yellow beam turned on and off for yet 3 more times, the microwave beam was an incredible invention. However wide the diameter of the beam was, the interior of the beam was like a microwave oven, kind of like a pre-laser kind of setup. And that's how you wrote that. That's how you fucking wrote that. Kind of like a pre-laser kind of setup. You wrote that. Be ashamed. This isn't a book. Okay. It's not even a person talking. It's just you, the person writing this. Shame on you. I wouldn't listen to any of your scientific advice. You can't even learn English good. Not good, not at all. Kind of like a pre-laser kind of setup, kind of. It could also reach a high power of 200,000 watts. It was an amazing tool for these ice cavities. Deep in the planet's surface and everywhere else. The entire surface was now clouding up. But our probes down on the surface was reporting massive amounts of snow accumulation and oxygen. You all need to note, oxygen is always capitalized. So is it the channel? I don't know. David's instruments were also showing large amounts of oxygen and water. You could even now see a jet stream developing. Again? Wow. The experiment was working good so far. Better than expected. Not for me. I knew it would go well. I believed in you, David. The experiment was... Even the Paulines were impressed by the microwave beam. It seemed that the surface was not taking long for the clarity of the atmosphere to clear up. You took so many words to say that. The surface was clearing. Whatever. Venus was clearing fast, and you could see the surface. Then what is the point of the last sentence?
It looked like Earth in the middle of winter.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to leave it there. The next page, there is some extremely long person. I think it's supposed to be an alien. It looks like they just took a human model and stretched the fuck out of its neck. So next, okay, this Saturday, if you're listening to this on this week, you know, the week of July's week, I have live on the 30th, which is Saturday. If you enjoy these at all, come and listen to me rant and ramble and talk to me in the chat. And I may or may not say something back to you. Who knows? It's easier earlier in the call when I'm not reading the worst stories that will possibly scar your mind, much worse than this, because they are sexual in nature. So if you want to join me, do that on Saturday. Otherwise, come back next week. There'll be another one, and I'll read more of David's fucking space adventures, terraforming everything and jamming it into ice cavities. And I hope you join me for more ice cavity adventures. I will talk to you then.